Good morning. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, and this is Morning Edition on VPR. To kick off our water series Downstream, we wanted to learn more about just how all the nutrients and pollutants that threaten Lake Champlain actually get there. First, we know that more than two-thirds of the phosphorus overload in the lake comes from Vermont. So to clean up its act, the state recently signed Act 64, Vermont's new Clean Water Act. It tackles runoff coming from sources varying from roofs and roads to forests and farms. But there is no simple fix for keeping pollution out of the lake. And to find out why, we turn to Breck Bowden, a professor of watershed science and planning at the University of Vermont and the director of the Vermont Water Resources and Lake Studies Center, to learn more about how the state's vast network of waterways and hilly geography makes stopping water pollution so complicated. I met up with Bowden at the Echo Lake Aquarium and Science Center in Burlington, which overlooks the lake itself, and he started by showing me the 30,000-foot view by looking at a topographical map of the Lake Champlain Basin.
So what we're looking at is what's called a three-dimensional relief map, and it's showing us what the lay of the land actually looks like if we were flying over Lake Champlain at, say, 50,000 feet or 30,000 feet in an airplane. And so we can see all of the mountain ranges, we can see all of the valleys, we can see all of the rivers. And in the middle of this watershed, which is the area that sheds water to Lake Champlain, we can see the outline of Lake Champlain just like we'd see it on a map. But also in a slightly lighter color, we can see that area that is contributing water to the lake.
Before we get into the watershed and some of the problems that Lake Champlain experiences with that, let's take a look at the big picture. I mean, why are nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus so bad for water health?
Well, actually, nitrogen and phosphorus are good for all of us, but like many things, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And it's the phosphorus that's going to the lake that's actually stimulating the algal blooms that people are concerned about.
Those blue-green algae blooms that we always hear about in the summer. But you do say that, again, it's only when there's too much of a good thing. What is the role in the ecosystem of these nutrients? The good role, let's say.
The good role of these nutrients is that they help organisms grow. The best analogy that I can give you is, let's say that you were trying to build a little work shed in your backyard. You would need a little bit of plywood, and you'd need some 2x4s, and you'd need some nails. Okay, but if you built this shed, you'd need only a few sheets of plywood, you'd need a lot more 2x4s, and you'd need a lot more nails to be able to put it together correctly. Living organisms are basically the same way. You and I, and fish and algae, need about 102 atoms of carbon for every 14 atoms of nitrogen for every one atom of phosphorus. So it's like the sheets of plywood, the 2x4, and the nail. The blue-green algae are very special algae. They can manufacture all the nitrogen that they need, so they can make 2x4s. And so it's nails that's the limiting nutrient. It's phosphorus that's the limiting nutrient for these guys to build biomass, to build the shed. So if we give them nails, if we give them phosphorus, they'll go crazy and grow.
Now, getting back to this map here, it's a three-dimensional map, and we see the light green areas that are showing the landscape, and then there's not as much blue area representing the actual lake. And what problem does that represent?
That's a great observation. That's a special characteristic of Lake Champlain. So the basin area around Lake Champlain is about 19 times larger than the water area of the lake itself. And if we compare that to some of our neighbor lakes, like the Great Lakes to the west of us, that ratio for the Great Lakes is more like 3 or 4 to 1. So we have 5 times more area contributing sediments and nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, to the lake than is normal for other lakes. In fact, this ratio of 19 to 1 is the largest ratio of any lake that we know of in the world. And what it means is that we have about a 5-time amplification factor compared to the Great Lakes with respect to the delivery of phosphorus from distant places, all the way up in Tupper Lake, all the way over in Montpelier, all the way down to Whitehall and Rutland, delivering nutrients, in particular phosphorus, to Lake Champlain.
Now, this map also shows us smaller, thinner blue lines, and those represent rivers. Did those rivers pose a problem?
The rivers are posing a problem in that they transport material from these different distant locations to the lake. But there's a new problem that we're really just beginning to appreciate, and that's the role of stream bank erosion in its ability to deliver phosphorus to the lake. This was an underappreciated component of the entire phosphorus budget for Lake Champlain. We now know that about a quarter of the phosphorus is coming from stream bank erosion. And that's not just from agriculture. Agriculture is certainly a contributor, but it's also coming from urban areas. In fact, urban areas are a disproportionately large contributor of phosphorus to the lake, and from forested areas. There's a small amount of phosphorus that comes out of forested areas, but we have so much forested area that it cumulatively contributes a lot to the lake.
Since the problem is an imbalance in the ecosystems, you were talking before, too much of something is not a good thing. Is there a possibility that there could be a biological fix? And what I mean is, in addition to reducing runoff, since all plants need nitrogen and phosphorus to survive, is there a way to use plants to suck more nutrients out of the lake and clean the water, in effect?
Well, that's a great question, and it's something that we have tried doing in a variety of ways. And actually, there's a wonderful example of this. At the rest stop on the way up I-89, visitors can actually see what we call a living machine. And that's something that we use. That is something in which plants and algae and bacteria are purposely cultured to remove waste from the sewage stream to produce water that is not drinkable quality, but clean enough to be released directly into a river. And so that type of technology exists at the scale of working in individual buildings or collections of buildings. The idea of taking that all the way to a large lake is an interesting and challenging one.
Are you optimistic, hopeful about the future health of the lake, or do you think that this problem has gotten so bad in recent years that and it's only going to get worse with other challenges like climate change perhaps making it tougher?
A terrible question, because I think it probably will get a little bit worse before it gets better, but I think that we're on the right track, and I'm really gratified to see the public appreciation of what's going on, the public involvement in trying to think about solutions. In my work, I get to work with a wide array of people, from not-for-profit organizations to state agencies to federal agencies, and certainly the dedication that I see in those people to solve this problem is really gratifying. I just have to reiterate that we have to be in this for the long haul, and we all have to work together, not pointing fingers at other people, but actually working together to solve this problem, or it will just get worse. So as long as we work together, and we now have the tools and H35, and the TMDL that's coming from EPA, I think there's very clearly hope for the future.
Thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Mitch.